I'm going to talk about avoidable and non-avoidable noise and talk a little bit about reducing the noise pollution in the ICU, because as you will see, there is a lot of pollution. As Michael already told, I'm from the Netherlands, from 's-Hertogenbosch. As he also told, I'm not speaking German properly enough to hold a presentation. The Netherlands is close to Germany, and I had some German language education while back in high school, but my level would not be higher than this, and I don't want to get into troubles talking about in German, so I'll stick to English. I want to talk about some noise physics and impact on humans, noise sources in the ICU, of course, impact of noise on ICU patients, and at the end I want to do some more practical things and give you some tips and tricks on avoiding noise pollution. We learned in high school that sound is a pressure wave, and its wavelength is corresponds with the frequency and is expressed in hertz, and the amplitude is the sound pressure and is expressed in decibels. And we know we can hear about 20 to 20,000 hertz with an optimal range of 1,000 to 5,000 hertz. And the auditory threshold is 0 decibels, and the pain threshold lies about 120. And on the right you can see the decibel scale with some daily noise events besides it. So for example, a library at 30 decibels, average traffic on the main road at 80, and below above 90 decibels it's becoming really noisy factory pneumatic drill. And it's important to keep this in mind, because I will talk about decibels later on, and then you can compare it to daily noise events. But first we have to differentiate sound between noise. Noise is defined as an unwanted sound. And obviously, it's not only the physical properties that make a sound a noise. It's also whether it's the impact of the noise on the person and the subjective perception. So other factors besides physical parameters are also important. So like the duration of sound, or the frequency, the tonality, the peak to background ratio, and familiarity of the sound. And as you will see, in most research performed, these factors are not taken into account. It's important to know. What do we know about effects of noise on humans? Well, obviously, when sound pressure levels are very high for a long time, you can get hearing loss, as occurs in certain occupancies. But there are also non-auditory effects, like effects on nighttime noise, on sleep disturbances, or cardiovascular function, or annoyance stress. The World Health Organization has published a report a couple of years ago on the burden of environmental noise, especially road traffic noise and airplane noise, on people. And they estimated that the loss of disability-adjusted life years, which is the number of lost life years and the number of life years lived with disabilities, because of the effect of noise on sleep disturbances, is 900,000 in Europe alone, and the effect of noise on annoyance and stress, 650,000. But also an association has been found between noise and ischemic heart disease and cognitive impairment, for example. So it is quite a problem in worldwide. World Health Organization has also stated that that the noise pressure level in hospitals should be about 30 decibels, which is the library, as I just mentioned, during the night, with peaks to 40 decibels. And they even say that particular attention should be given to the sound pressure levels in operating theaters and intensive cares. Well, unfortunately, we don't manage to do so, and also not for a long time already, because this study has evaluated the noise pressure levels in hospitals over the years. And even back in the mid-60s, as you can see, these noise pressure levels during the night were already above 40 decibels and have steadily increased to more than 60 decibels, which is the average sound pressure of a conversation during the night. And also, if we zoom into more to acute care facilities, the sound pressure levels are in that range. You can see, for example, in the study from a couple of years ago, average occupied sound pressure levels between 55 and 60 decibels, with emergency department units being a little bit more noisy. But you can also see that when the room is not occupied, there is still quite a lot of noise, implicating that also a lot of noise is coming from not the bedside, but from a distance. we performed sound pressure measurements in our old ISU, and in our new ISU we moved to a new location a couple of years ago, and unfortunately we didn't do much better. And if we zoom into those data, then you can see that the daytime average sound pressure level is 60, but the nighttime sound pressure level, which is more perhaps more important because patients should sleep at that time, is still very high. It's only slightly less than during daytime. And you can see that peak levels are on average above 90 decibels, which is equivalent to standing next to a highway at 10 meters distance. And also during nighttime, it's only slightly less. So there is a lot of noise in the ICU. And if we look more closely to where this noise is coming from, then you can you can investigate it in different ways. For example, in this study, there was a human observer in a room, and he just noted right down what happened. And you can see, for example, that there was some percent of time was monitor alarms, television. But there was also quite a lot of talking with peak levels to 84 decibels. So this could give a sense of perhaps avoidable sound. We performed a similar analysis not too long ago, and we did not use a human observer, but we took an audio recording in an ICU room during 24 hours, and we processed this recording offline and extracted this acoustic parameters like sound pressure levels. But the more important thing was that we let six researchers listen to this audio recording second by second, minute by minute, to investigate the noise sources, and they came up with 27,000 noise events in this 24-hour period. A lot of the noise is also occurring at the same time. And they grouped, on the left, they grouped these noises into 28 noise sources. For example, you can see patient-involved speech, unavoidable speech, avoidable speech, and they were Dutch-speaking researchers, so they could understand what was happening. You can see noises coming from medical devices, but you can see also a lot of noise coming from activities by the staff. For example, a paper noise, footsteps, a rubbish bin opening, telephone ringing. And these 28 noise sources were then categorized into five categories: patient-involved speech, staff speech, alarms, medical devices, and as I just said, noise generated by staff activities. And if we looked at how frequently these noise events were occurring, then you can see that staff activity occurred most frequently, with an average during daytime of 10 per minute, and during nighttime it was only slightly less, and this exceeded that of the staff-involved speech and of alarms. And you can see medical devices only accounted for a small amount of the noise events. And if we were to put all these noise events after each other, then we found that staff speech occurred 7 hours continuously if we put all the speech after each other, fortunately mainly during daytime but also during nighttime for a small part, exceeding that of staff activity. As I just told, we also used more physical properties of the noise, and we connected them to these noise sources. And if we subtracted patient speech from the analysis, then we found that noise generated by staff speech and staff activity accounted for 57% of total acoustic energy in this 24 hours, exceeding that of the alarms and of medical devices. And as you can see, for example, ASP stands for avoidable speech. So there was room for improvement in this recording. So we really can say that the ICU is a noisy environment, and most of this noise is coming from alarms or from ourselves. And yeah, as I just said, some of it may be avoidable. But the question is it directly harmful for our ICU patients? Well, 150 years ago, Florence Nightingale already stated that unnecessary noise is the most cruel absence of care which can be inflicted on sick or the well, in her very interesting book, Notes on Nursing. But if we look more systemically, then you can think of effects on the patient, for example, on sleep or on stress. But we also should not forget that noise can also influence staff, as I just showed in the beginning. What do we know about sleep in ICU patients? Well, some things have been mentioned before, but sleep is severely disrupted, as we know, with a predominance of light sleep and nearly absent REM sleep. and is associated with the risk of developing delirium, but also associated with immune dysfunction and increased stress. And for example, this study published in Critical Care last year analyzed polysomnographic data of 57 Australian patients, and they found a total average sleep time of 5 hours with a median sleep without waking of only 3 minutes, and 41% of total sleep time occurring during the day, and 27 arousals per hour, so that's really horrible. And a lot of the total sleep time, as I mentioned above, occurring in stage 1 or 2, which is the lightest forms of sleep. And the patients also found that the noise being the most disruptive factor in their sleep. However, if we look more systemically to the direct effects of noise on patient sleep, this review was published a couple of years ago, and they analyzed 11 studies regarding the effect of noise on sleep, and they found somewhat conflicting results, with about half of the studies showing a clear relation between, for example, noise peaks and arousals on polysomnography, but other studies failing to find this correlation. However, these studies all use different measurements, and the authors concluded that noise is among other factors disturbing sleep in patients. How about effect on stress, so the more subjective perception? Well, most studies report noise as being disruptive in about 40 to 60%. For example, this study recently published analyzed data of 23 patients who were able to recall their experience from the ICU, and they found noise to be present in 65% of these patients, and of them 71% thought it to be disruptive. But also among caregivers, as was published last year in this study among French ICUs, noise is being considered a very discomforting factor. It is in the top three among paramedics and as well as physicians in France. As I just said, you can also think of effects on staff. There are some studies showing increased stress and annoyance with the high noise levels on the ICU, and one study even found noise to be associated with an increased risk of burnout. In other not nursing jobs, there's an association between high noise levels and hypertension, so there are also some bad things to the staff as well. So we can say that the evidence is suggestive of negative effects of noise, but what can we do to improve it? Well, there are some different options. You can think of behavioral modification, especially for staff, structural adaptation, alarm modification, earplugs, very simple solution. There are some other options. I think the most important thing in behavioral modification is that we should become aware that we're generating a lot of noise, especially during nighttime. So there are some steps that you can easily take, for example, closing doors, reducing nighttime activities. And you can think of using a device like this as some kind of traffic light or a sound ear, which are commercially available, to give feedback on the noise pressure level generated by ourselves. There have been some studies analyzing effects of guidelines. For example, this study in critical care medicine from 2000, they analyzed these guidelines: systematic closure of doors, reduction of intensity of alarm sound, limitation of nursing during the night, conversation with low voice and no direct light, and they found less nighttime noise and less nighttime light, but the background noise remained unchanged. But you can also create silent times. For example, in this study there was silent times created between 2 and 4 a.m. and also in the afternoon among 50 neuro ICU patients, and they really found significantly lower light and noise levels during quiet times, and they also found a higher chance of patients being asleep. What about structural adaptation? Well, obviously you should consider noise when developing new ICU. We unfortunately failed to do so in our new ICU, as you just saw, but if you are able to do so and think about noise, then single bedrooms might be a better option. For example, this study published last year showed unnecessary noise being far more frequently present in three bedrooms than in single bedrooms with a bedside nursing station, and even when you have a separate alcove, then the noise levels even were less frequent. If you were to adapt your ISU, then some studies have evaluated the creation of a service corridor if it's not present there, leading to less noise and higher staff satisfaction. And some other studies have evaluated the effect of sound absorbing tiles in the ceiling, which led to reduced stress and less readmission rates. Something about alarm modification. Well, as I've shown you, alarms contribute to a large burden of noise, and up to 90% of alarms are false, and 72% of all alarms do not lead to actions. And important to know is that the number of different types of alarms have risen from 6 in 1983 on average to 14 in 2011, different sounds. So you can imagine that apart from noise disturbance, this can also lead to alarm fatigue with potential detrimental effects. And I think in the future we will see that the number of false alarms will probably decrease because of the development of smart alarms. But there are some things you could consider right now already. For example, studies have shown that if you were to change the ECG electrodes daily, this would lead to 46% reduction in alarms. If you were to customize the alarm parameters to individual patients, it led to a 43% reduction in alarms in another study. Setting different limits, for example, the high heart rate from 120 to 130, or for example, the SpO2 threshold from 90 to 88, led to a significant reduction in alarms without affecting patient safety. There are also some studies showing that if you were to delay an SpO2 alarm for a certain amount of time, in this case 15 seconds, it also led to a reduction in alarms. What about earplugs? Well, obviously they are quite cheap and easy to use, and there have been some studies showing beneficial effects on sleep quality in combination with eye masks. No large studies are available, but I think they could be they are easily applicable in cooperative awake patients. Do we have any other options? Well, some studies have evaluated the effect of a continuous low frequency noise like white noise or some kind of ocean noise on ICU patients. For example, in this study there was white noise used in healthy volunteers exposed to ICU noise, and they found increased arousal threshold, so this might be an option. I'm not aware of ICUs using this technique, but it has been investigated. This study was referred to by the last speaker already, music, as was asked back there. Last year, this study was published evaluating the effect of patient-directed music on anxiety and sedative exposure in critically ill patients. Multicenter study among 373 patients, and they compared usual care versus noise-canceling headphones and patient-directed music. And the outcome was anxiety as measured by a visual analog scale and sedation intensity. And results showed that there was less anxiety in patient-directed music and noise-canceling headphones compared to usual care. And there was a lower sedation frequency in patient-directed music compared to the noise-canceling headphones and usual care. So this might be something to consider, perhaps not in this fashion, but just by turning on music. So to come to my conclusion, the ICU is very noisy, and noise may have negative impacts on patients, mainly by disturbing sleep. And noise reduction strategies have shown beneficial effects on noise and outcome. And my suggested approach would be to start with creating awareness, behavioral modification, perhaps alarm modification, and earplugs when feasible. Thank you for your attention.